WPFW Washington, and I'm your host tonight, guest host Ola, and I am joined here by Stefan Immler, the film director of Oxygen for the Ears, film documentary, and the owner of Giga Nova Productions. Stefan Immler is a astrophysicist for NASA, and one of the first questions which I have to ask is, how does an astrophysicist become a documentary maker and about jazz music?
Well, I think it was a very spontaneous idea, because when I moved to Washington, D.C. with my wife 8 years ago, we moved to Adams Morgan. But my office was in Greenbelt, Maryland at NASA, so I had to drive to U Street twice a day. And I was just fascinated by all these amazing buildings, you know, that are along U Street, like the Howard Theater, the Republic Gardens, all these weird buildings.
It's charming.
Yes, it's charming, but also they're falling apart. They're not being renovated, at least at that time when I lived there. So I was intrigued about the history of these buildings. It was clear to me that they had some significance because nobody raised them. On the other hand, nobody renovated them either. So I was doing a little bit of research, and then I was really amazed by this incredible history of jazz on U Street, starting really with the beginnings of jazz. And I really got intrigued by this idea of just telling a story how jazz came to D.C. during the Civil War, during the Great Migrations, and these kind of things, and how this remarkable African-American community evolved on U Street. And it's still strong to this day. And I just wanted to tell the story about the unique African-American community and the relationship to jazz on U Street.
Well, it seems that it goes broader than U Street, your documentary.
Right. Yes.
And one of the things I think people who have actually seen it so far, and we'll come to how people, the listeners, can actually get to see this documentary
right.
later on, is that it's the heart of the story. There's so much integrity in it. Can you tell me the heart of the story and how it managed to unfold and to include some of the really wonderful new great talents around? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, the next step for us was of course, after, you know, trying to figure out about the history of jazz in D.C., going out to all these jazz venues at night, you know. So I spent like years going out to any, you know, jazz-related venue I could find in D.C. And there's just so many of them. I was really blown away that you can find jazz almost in every corner in D.C. And then I met all these remarkable, you know, talents in D.C., all these young jazz musicians. And also some of the older guys, you know, who've been there in D.C. since almost the beginning of jazz, you know, at least 1920s, you know, and 30s. And I got to meet all these wonderful people, you know, and that was really an epiphany moment for me. And I met so many remarkable people that are friends now in my life. It's amazing.
And did you feel part of the need to tell the story was, did you feel a sense of responsibility and the need
yeah,
to preserve?
Absolutely. Maybe not the preservation aspect, actually. And this is something we discussed in the last chapter of our film, the tension between the preservation aspect and, you know, jazz going off in different new directions. But I felt very strongly about of telling the story of these amazing talents in D.C. and also some of the old guys in D.C. They have remarkable life stories. And yet almost nobody knows them outside of D.C. You know, there's some really incredible characters in D.C. Like there's Buck Hill, who's been playing tenor saxophone, you know, since the 1930s. And he played with the greatest of jazz, you know. He was even asked to go on tour with Miles Davis and John Coltrane. And he didn't want to because he had a family in the district. He wanted to stay here. So we have all these incredible stories of, for instance, Butch Warren, who was born and raised in D.C. and then went to New York in the early 60s and met Thelonious Monk. And he is the bassist on at least 30, 35 of the most important jazz records of all times. And he lives in D.C. He's still playing. Every week you can just go out and hear him play. But outside of D.C., people don't know these incredible characters. You know? So I felt like a responsibility to give them a stage, to highlight them, you know, to give them an opportunity to tell their stories.
And One of the musicians that you also feature and you describe as a true piano genius is Dwayne Adele.
Yes.
Now, quite simply, I mean, I just think he's just an extraordinary musician.
Yeah, he's remarkable.
He's exceptional.
Right. Yes.
And I think, you know, from you, we both grew up in Europe,
right.
And I think we probably heard a lot of musicians in Europe as well.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that what you have done by actually featuring musicians of such as Dwayne Adele and to showcase the whole range of talent, and of course, it's, you know, there are a number of wonderful talents. And it is really, I think, something really that you have to, I think people should acknowledge what
right.
you've done here as well.
Exactly. Right. And I was intrigued, you know, by the idea of finding new young talents, you know, and giving them a stage so they can really bring the music to the people.
Right.
So I was actually looking for jazz musicians where I thought they had an amazing talent, like Dwayne Adele, who at that time when I met him didn't really have an opportunity to play a lot of gigs and jazz venues.
Which is remarkable in itself.
Right, yeah.
I mean, because...
And I hope this is going to change now. Now he has great upcoming gigs and I hope people get to hear him.
I think he's playing at Blues Alley.
Blues Alley,
August 6th. So I think they can definitely check him out there.
Right.
Because one of the things I think perhaps frustrating to the listeners now is that, well, okay, so there's this documentary, Oxygen for the Ears, and it's featuring all these wonderful talent like Esperanza Spalding. How do we get to see it? I mean, if it's about DC, with DC artists, and you're just tantalizing us with this information.
Right, I know.
Where, do they get to see it?
Well, we started submitting the film to film festivals because we first wanted to test, you know, what is, I mean, do people like the film? What is the reception of the audience?
You've done that. Your website's
I know.
There's right. no more space on your website for all the festivals
yes.
this has been to.
Nervous how the audience in DC is going to react to this. So we had a private screen a couple of weeks ago, and it was just wonderful to see so many people coming to the Atlas Theater. So now we are encouraged, so I think we can let it out of the bag. And there's two screenings coming up that are part of two film festivals. There's one film festival which is called the World Music and Independent Film Festival. And the film will be screened at the Navy Memorial Burke Theater in downtown D.C. on August 21st.
That's August the 21st. And can you repeat the name of the venue? And also, do you have an address there? Or?
It's the World Music and Independent Film Festival in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Which takes place at the Burke Auditorium at the Navy Memorial in downtown D.C.
Wonderful.
And the official release of the film will be a little bit later on October 12th at the Real Independent Film Extravaganza in Washington, D.C. It's a wonderful film festival that show only independent movies. And we're just so lucky that they made our film the highlight of the festival. And they're going to show it during the opening night of the festival on October 12th at the West End Cinema.
Wonderful.
And we'll have a big after-hour party just across the street. And I just hope everybody will come.
Is everyone invited to the party?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'll be there. The website. Now, just in case people need to be reminded again as to when they can actually see the film, is Oxygen, www.oxygenfortheears.com. That's oxygenfortheears.com. And that brings me to the title, Oxygen for the Ears... Living Jazz. How did you arrive at that?
We had a working title that was very different. So for 3 years, we had a different title for the film. But then we filmed an interview with Jimmy Junebug Jackson, a remarkable drummer and a good friend of mine.
Rest in peace.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Junebug basically gave us the title of the film because he said in an on-camera interview that jazz is like oxygen for the ears, for the heart, for the soul. And we dedicate the film to Junebug.
Wow. Wow. And it says, the full title is Oxygen for the Ears, Living Jazz.
Right.
What are you trying to convey by the living jazz aspect?
I think one important message is that jazz is not just a historical form of music. It's just as alive and as relevant now as it has ever been. And this is something we try to show in the film also.
Why do you think jazz is relevant?
Well, jazz is... an artistic expression, you know, where people really can express themselves in an incredibly free and unconstrained way. like this is a medium where people can express themselves in like the most free form of all, because you have almost no boundary conditions.
Right.
Yes, there's space for improvisation. You can bring in your own voice. You can do whatever you want to do. And jazz is evolving, like constantly evolving, always has and still is. And even if you go to a jazz bar and you hear a band playing a particular jazz song and they play the same song the next night, it will sound different because it's constantly evolving and it's a very personal form of music.
And isn't that the special thing about hearing jazz live? The connection,
the connection that's made. And we are just so blessed to have these amazing jazz venues in D.C. And a great audience in D.C. that supports the jazz artists. You can really go out and see all these talents almost every night.
So you see jazz as relevant, not just in terms of an expression of life, but in the context of jazz as a movement, as a people.
Right.
How would you talk about the importance of that? And how does the film actually touch on that as well?
Well, we have a number of topics in the film that we touch, and we try to explore the relationship between jazz and other, you know, parts of society, you know, and how it touches people. And for me, that actually started already at the early phase of jazz and definitely, you know, how jazz was created. You know, I mean, this is such a unique story, how people came together and made this music out of scratch, you know, from nothing, you know. And the improvisational aspect, of course, is absolutely at the core of jazz. But then also, coming back to D.C., jazz is particularly relevant in D.C. because of the civil rights movement and the freedom movements that came out of the strong African-American community in the Shaw District. And even before that, you can go back to the 1920s, you know, and explore the origins of the Harlem Renaissance, which actually started here in D.C., which most people, especially in New York, probably wouldn't know, that the Harlem Renaissance started in D.C. And all the great writers, you know, and poets of the Harlem Renaissance, they lived right in the Shaw District in D.C. And they lived in this vibrant jazz community, and they talk about it in their poems and in their books. Langston Hughes, you know, talks about the Howard Theater and the music that he saw on U Street and 7th Street.
Now that brings even greater context and I think significance to people who will see the photo shoot, which should be coming out soon, which you were present at outside the Howard Theatre,
right,
which replicates the Great Day in Harlem shoot with the, I think, 58 artists that were there. Actually, 57 in 1958, if I remember well. Okay. And it was... for that to relive that moment with the current, it shows really how much it is still living. And the listeners can actually see the photos which will be coming out on capitalbop.com shortly. But one of the things I would like to ask is that, do you think that while jazz is living, do you think it's still do you think it's sustainable the way it's currently being offered?
Yes, I think it is. Of course, Washington, D.C. has a disadvantage compared to other cities like New York, because we don't have any record labels in D.C., we don't have any promoters here. So it's very difficult for jazz musicians in D.C., you know, to really break out and make a name for themselves and get their music to a worldwide audience. So I think jazz artists in D.C. have a challenge they have to overcome. But on the other hand, we have this incredibly supportive audience in D.C., unlike many other cities, you know. Usually the jazz venues are packed almost every night. So I believe jazz is in a very good state in D.C., and I hope it will be for many, many years to come and decades to come.
Well, I think that the good thing is, I think that there's some wonderful young talent who I would describe as the new architects of the D.C. jazz scene who are coming up. And in fact, one of them is Luke Stewart, and together with his partner, Giovanni Rossellino, what they did within the Capital Bop arm of the D.C. Jazz Festival was quite tremendous. I mean, I think it wasn't an easy thing, but clearly they were able to pull and attract forward-thinking artists to come along. And in fact, one of them I went to see, Chris Funn, the bass player, who, I mean, he's like an ambassador for his instrument, the way he plays, the way he connects with the audience. I was there, and again, with some people from London, and it was amazing with the festival. I always kept mm-hmm. bumping into Londoners.
You had to mention Londoners.
And these two guys, I mean, they were really just going. They enjoyed it so much, and it was, right. and it was very fresh. So I think that, you know, it does identify a need that we do need to have continuous architects. We do need to have continuous promoters supporting and generating it. But I think that I'm wondering, from a filmmaker's perspective, the story that you told, if you could go back. Perhaps in another 5 years from now, if you could actually say, I'm going to add 10 more minutes to this documentary, what would you like to have seen happen to add to the story even more?
Well, I think my big frustration is basically that even though the film is long, it's a 93-minute film, if you sit in the audience, it's really long. You will notice, though, that we had to omit so many things because there's just too much going on in DC to squeeze it into this weird format of a film. And if you think about it, even though the film is 1.5 hours long, the actual transcript of the entire film is only 50 pages. Imagine somebody would give you a book about jazz in DC and it would only be 50 pages thin. So, coming back to the question, if I could, I would make probably a 10-part series of jazz in DC for, I don't know, PBS or HBO or something.
That sounds a great idea. If anyone's listening, if anyone's listening to this,
right.
that would just be, it would be splendid. Yes. Because I think that it would be something which would be educational, that's mm-hmm. going to be something not for our generation, but for the next generation. Right. And I think it's something which jazz itself, as in the context, the history of this country, is recognized tremendously outside of this country. And so therefore, even so more should be embraced.
Oh yeah,
so
absolutely.
If PBS, if you're listening, could you call him, please?
Please give me a call.
What's your name again? Well, it's a pleasure having you here, Stefan.
Thank you for having me.
Please, oxygenfortheears.com, check it out, and please go and watch the film. Thank you.